All right. Well, good evening, and thank you so much for tuning in to Urban Conversation. This is your host, Miguel Marie, and I'm actually pretty excited about the show tonight. Before I bring my special guest in, I want to kind of go over a couple of things. We have a lot of new things that that we're trying to do with Urban Conversation, as well as I have a new co-host that I've added in to the Urban Conversation family. She's not going to be on tonight, but Athena Mitchell is going to be joining us on our next air date, and really looking forward to you guys getting to know her. I've known her for a few years, and she's an amazingly talented, intelligent young lady. We've worked together. She's been in my productions, and so she's definitely going to be a great addition to Urban Conversation Radio. If you have not already, make sure you join us on our open forum page, Urban Conversation Radio, on Facebook. That's where you'll get all of the updates. You'll also be able to kind of chime in and give your opinions on different topics that we post. To make sure that when you guys are submitting any questions or comments that you want to be read online tonight, make sure that you inbox them to Miguel Marie on Facebook. Don't go to the admin page. I'm always on my Miguel Marie page, so you guys can connect with me during the live show. I know a lot of you guys don't like to be on air, but I see you guys are calling in, and I know some of you are listening online, so I'm really, really glad that you kind of took a break from the football, and you want to, you know, continue to give your support to Urban Conversation. So I don't want to hold us up too much longer, because I really want to take as much time as we possibly can to get into this. So what I'm going to do before I patch him in, I'm going to read his bio to you guys. And this is exactly how he gave it to me. And I just think it exemplifies his great humor, and which is one of the things that I love about him. And you guys are going to see for yourself. We actually, we tried to have him on the show some months back, and we had a lot of people calling in, and the lines and everything were, I don't know what happened, but Blog Talk, it basically crashed the entire show. We lost connection. Got dropped from the call. He got dropped. It was a lot of crazy stuff that happened. So I've been trying to get a good date with him to get him to come back. And, you know, there's so many things that he can talk about. And this is actually one of my favorite subjects. So I'm looking forward to it. So without further ado, Kenneth Bradley is a 34-year-old confused man. I'm going to try to read this without laughing. He's the husband of Melody, beautiful, I love her, she's my friend, and father of two prodigies. He's a naval officer that has served for over 15 years. He's a pastor, playwright, comedian, author, poet, rapper, and blogger. The blog, by the way, is absolutely amazing. I'll put the link to that on our page again. It's kennethology.com, so you guys definitely want to get up on that. I know I'm going all over the place. And he's also currently looking for more things to do, as if he doesn't have enough going on. He studied education at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. He also founded Camp Liberation Records, and they released six albums, maybe more now, I'm not sure. He can clarify that for us. Recently established Rebel City Hype Music with four artists and is working on a new project. I already gave you guys Kennethology, so I'm kind of backtracking over myself. And for the blog, he says that they have a blog squad that is full of superstars. Currently residing in Seattle, Washington, Kenneth loves to serve as a voice against injustice, but will also roast anyone deserving of his words. So let me introduce to our Urban Conversation family, Kenneth Bradley. Are you there, sir? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Is that an applause soundbite, or are you actually like in a stadium full of people? You actually got the sound bite. Unfortunately, the stadium audience was not available tonight. So.
Okay. All right. They all suck. Hello.
They do. Well, how are you doing, sir?
I'm amazing. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show, back on the show. I know this has been a long time coming, so I'm excited about this evening's conversation.
It has, and you. We actually have quite a few faithful listeners, and they are tuning in right now, so I'm really glad about that. My hope is that, you know, I know a lot of people struggle with this whole topic of purpose. So before we, like, really dig into it, I have people that will come to me and ask me, you know, why is it important to find my purpose? Like, you know, I work and, you know, I'm paying my bills, raising my kids, you know, what is the importance of knowing your purpose? What would your answer be to someone who would say that to you?
Actually, I would quote Alice and the Cat from Alice in Wonderland. The why behind the purpose. The cat says to Alice, "Where are you going?" And then Alice says, "Which way should I go?" And the cat says, "It depends on where you're trying to go." And Alice says, "I don't know where I'm trying to go." And then the cat says, "Well, then it doesn't matter which way you go." Purpose defines and also gives clarity to direction. It gives us drive, push, enthusiasm, ambition, motivation, commitment, conviction, dedication, and et cetera. Without purpose, you will be seemingly aimlessly walking, meaning there's no target with your aim on it, and so you're just astray. And so if your life, if you are okay with your life, not having focus, not having target, and not having aims, then that is one thing. But if there's a sense of not knowing and truly understanding your passions and who you are when you fit in the big scheme of things and also in the smaller scheme of things, it's very important to primarily identify what your purpose or purposes are, in short.
I love that. That cat was very smart, by the way, very wise.
Yes. I'm scared of cats, so it's kind of odd.
Yeah, I don't like cats. They're a little freaky, but he in particular was very wise and cunning and some other descriptors that I could throw out, but that would take us off topic. so we'll just leave the cat there. But absolutely, I love your answer, and I think I basically tell people that if you don't want to live while you have life, then don't be concerned with what your purpose is. But if you want to live while you have life, then discover what your purpose is. I think that without knowing what is inside of you and what makes you tick and why you tick the way that you do, you're not really living, you're just existing. And, you know, and unfortunately, though, some people are okay with that, you know, so it's kind of like, yeah, this conversation is for people that I think want to elevate to that place where they actually know what their purpose is. And I oftentimes get asked, well, how do you know, how do you discover it? And, you know, a lot of times people feel like they're supposed to just automatically know, and that's not the case. You know, finding your purpose or realizing your purpose, rather, can definitely be a process. So speak on the process of discovering your purpose. Some people, the few, you know, there's a small percentage of people who, you know, from children, you know, from childhood, they knew what they wanted to do and what made them tick. But everybody is not like that. So what do you feel is the process of discovering what one's purpose is?
Okay. And obviously this is all, I don't know, subjective in a sense. I honestly believe that in order to – okay, let me backtrack a little bit more. You made a comment about some people actually don't have the mindset to even say, hey, what my purpose is. I mean, unfortunately, this earth is going to be filled with people who are not going to have a lasting impression. They're not going to leave legacy. They're space takers, right? But there's a demographic of people that have a certain awareness of self and kind of a bigger perspective and a bigger view. And they have something that is larger than life residing in them, and they have a hard time figuring out what that is. I think one of the first shifts that probably needs to take place for a person to discover what their purpose is to shift their focus from they need to find a purpose to serve and not a lifestyle to live. And when people, a lot of times when we are living this life, we look at things, we look at materialistic things, we look at stuff, and we say, I want to live this certain lifestyle. And so all of their ambitions and energies go towards living a lifestyle, as opposed to finding what a purpose is that they should serve. So when you look at even what purpose is, you know, the etymology behind it, right, or the object of a purpose is something that serves a purpose. So when you identify a purpose, you being the object are supposed to serve that purpose. So if there's a level of servitude, I believe, in that. There's a level of giving. There's a level of impact that a person needs to have that I believe sharply aligns with purpose. Another thing, I believe that there are levels and different planes of purpose. I think purpose has, once it's identified, it takes on different contexts. Based on, I guess, relation and or situation. So, all right, so me and you, we believe in God, right? So, obviously, there's a context of there's a purpose by design. He designed me for a purpose, and so I want to walk out and walk in that purpose. What about the person who does not believe in God? How do they find their purpose? So their purpose is going to reside relationally. My purpose to my kids, my purpose to my family, my purpose to my community, my purpose to mankind as a whole, this earth, my purpose to a cause, which I think really ties to passion and how people are particularly wired. If you just pay attention to what wires you, what jump starts you, you have to begin seeking. Sometimes that seeking comes from meditation, it comes from reading, it comes from getting out and exploring things about yourself and finding these levels of connection. And once you find that context in which your purpose fits, then you're able to kind of identify moves, identify angles, identify, I guess, your speed and direction as you're navigating through life. So, and I'll close out the answer to this particular question in this, and it kind of touches base on something else I wanted to get on. I was charged by one of my mentors to define who I am as a person by doing a couple of things. He said, I want you to think of like three words that define you as a person and then a quote. And I want you to make sure that people that you impact or people that you mentor come across, when they come up or when they say your name or if anyone else brings up your name, they can say these three words or they can mark this quote, and you're known by that because you live out these principles. And that was those three words are humility, passion, and legacy. And then a quote, which I particularly made up, and this is the part that I want to touch base on, a quote that I made up, something funny that happened in high school one time. I was the proverbial class clown, which I'm pretty sure you did not deduce that I was a class clown.
I would have never got that.
Okay,
from you.
I hear the sarcasm
totally
in your voice,
like,
and I'm
like...
not appreciative. I hear the sarcasm, and I'm not going to stand for it tonight. Okay, so I was disrupting class. The biology teacher is like, all right, you guys need to focus because high school is going to be over soon, and you guys are going to be out of high school, and you're not going to know what you're going to do in life. I want to go around and talk about what you guys are going to do in life. And he got around to me, and, you know, I was like, I want to be a mayor of the city one day. This guy laughed. He laughed so hard that I told him I wanted to be a mayor, right?
Wow.
And his response was, with sarcasm, because, you know, I pick up on that. He was like, yeah, because the sky's the limit with you. And I responded to him, F you, I own a telescope. and I got kicked out of class. Now, the dynamics of that has turned into a quote, right? The quote that I kind of coined from that is, someone once told me that the sky was my limit. I grabbed my telescope and walked away. And what that identifies with is people may see things for your life. People may put lofty expectations. They may try to see purpose. But one, if you own a telescope, and two, if you've looked at something through the lens of that telescope, some distant galaxy, some planet, some star, some black hole that represents your purpose that no one else can see because that's a singular viewing object, then it doesn't matter what anyone else says. It doesn't matter what the clouds are doing. It doesn't matter what's raining because you're living beyond all of that. You see something for yourself that's bigger than anything. So I encourage people to, one, own a telescope, and two, begin to view something that is seemingly larger than them. And they have to be able to connect with that. And I believe purpose is tied into that.
It definitely is. And aside from that F-bomb that you dropped, I like the quote. That's great.
I didn't actually say the word. I just said, no.
Oh, you didn't say it?
In the anecdote, I said F, but in the actual quote, there's no F-bomb. Jeez.
Got it. You know, sometimes the F-bomb is great for, you know, emphasizing, putting emphasis on certain things. So, but, you know, you said something that I kind of want to go a little deeper into, and that's you lightly touched on, you know, how people will try to I'm going to kind of expand on it, of course, but, you know, people will oftentimes try to attach what they see about you and about your life onto you and, you know, try to keep you in these boxes. And I know for me, I experienced that, you know, I went into ministry pretty early when I was in my 20s. And although I had been in the music industry and had done theater and different things when I was younger, when I realized that, you know, God was calling me into ministry, I, for some reason, because of the people, the wannabe mentors around me, and I say wannabe because they actually, yeah. You know, I had some true mentors, and then you have some that just want to be because they just want to attach themselves to you, and you're like,
mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah, but what you're saying is actually not. it's like, it's kind of off, so yeah, like, no. So... So I had people that wanted to kind of, you know, attach themselves to me and kind of give me their guidance, even though it was unsolicited, and wanted to kind of, you know, put me in this box. And so for many years, I was married young, and we were, you know, very, very engulfed in the church. And so for many years, I felt like I had to turn away the artistic side of me. Mm. And, you know, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you're in your 20s and you're still, you know, and I had gone through like a lot of hell. So I was, you know, God really like let me go through some stuff to give me some pretty deep wisdom. He could have just kind of told me, but I guess he figured I needed to go through
yeah.
some hell so it would really stick. But, you know, I got, you know, you know how we're deep in ministry and, you know, and then you start kind of getting deep and you're losing pieces of yourself thinking that equates you being more deep or centered or holy. And so I kind of went through that
yes.
whole thing of, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've been there. And so I felt like for a long, long time, like I couldn't be my creative self. You know, I felt like I had to do this big trade-off, and I subscribed to that belief system for a long time until, unfortunately, you know, I went through a divorce, and it was going through the divorce that, you know, I just didn't like the church. I didn't like church people. And I was questioning everything, including like, is that really, you know, my purpose? Is this, you know, forget all of the deliverances and stuff I would, you know, I saw God do through me. I was questioning everything. And what was actually happening was that God was allowing me to come to the end of myself so that the purpose in me could evolve. And a lot of times people feel like someone will say, this is what you're supposed to do, and then they think that's all that there is for them to do. Or they feel like they have to relinquish other parts of themselves to do that one thing. And God used that time to show me that I never told you to let go of your creativity. You know, I'm the consummate creator. Why would I want you to not create? Why would I want you to relinquish your artistic abilities? And so I had to go through this period where I had to reconcile, you know, what I felt I was called to do in the body of Christ versus the arts and so forth. So,
yes.
Yeah. So I know that there's someone listening, because I've heard it before. Don't let anyone put you in a box and make you believe that, you know, your purpose can't evolve. And it should constantly be evolving. You know, it should be, you know, going from greater to greater. And yeah. So tell me, share with us one of your experiences or struggles that you had somewhere at some point in your life when it came to either pursuing your purpose, believing in your purpose, dealing with people that doubted your purpose. Just share one of your own personal, you know, stories and how you came out of that.
Wow. Yes. Great question, Ms. LaGale. Oh, my God, you're so good at this. So,
oh, my gosh, thank you. Like, that so totally, like, just made me smile. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
Oh my
gosh. Are we going to get Starbucks? Are we going to get Starbucks after this?
And I,
I got an
inbox from someone listening, and they said that we're crazier than me and Manuel. So Manuel was a co-host on the show, and we kind of get really goofy, but they said that we're crazy. I don't know. Is that a good thing?
It might be, you know, crazy. Define crazy. Aren't we all a little crazy?
We are, depending on whose definition you're going by. But she says she loves the information that we're sharing. Keep going, okay? We're gonna keep going. Answer the question.
Okay, so the question. And I'm going to parallel this with what you were saying. And it's funny because me and Miguel have known each other for upwards of, I want to say,
a lot of years.
Something like that.
Yeah,
and Miguel remembers me very early in ministry. Met her in Chicago. She came there for a conference. And I bring this all up because this story kind of pings off of what you were talking about. So I got saved at, you know, 20, started preaching at 21, ordained an elder at 25, and then right after that I came out to Chicago. And there were so many people that wanted to attach. I mean, I had my true mentors. I had people that just saw something. They saw, I guess, charisma or something, and they wanted to attach themselves with me. And they would always see greatness in their context. Greatness as they see greatness, which in that particular time in vain is, you're going to be a great pastor and lead great churches and you're going to do X, Y, Z. And so I always saw myself in that time frame, really only thing matters, you know, only what you do for Christ will last, right? So see that within the context of church and ministry work, right? So I'm like, oh, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. So I started to divorce myself of any aspect of creativity because I had only done it, I guess, in a quote-unquote secular area, and I didn't see myself. There wasn't a place for me, you know, to operate freely.
Right.
There wasn't anybody there to cultivate those different aspects of myself. And so I started doing that, you know, traveling around the U.S., preaching overseas, preaching, and I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I start feeling this tug, like, this is not it. Like, this is not it. Because the more and more I got frustrated with the work, it wasn't that I wasn't able to do the work, is that I was frustrated with the work. And I'm like, this is not it. And God, one day I was playing the drums, and God, you know, do you want to be great in me? And what does that look like? And I knew that I was called to represent God in areas that didn't have God, and be able to stand and be relatable, And so in that particular aspect, especially music, oh, God forbid that I don't do Christian rap anymore, right? God, you
wow.
know, God forbid that I'm a rap, instead of a Christian rapper, I'm a rapper that's a Christian. I mean, because, you know, when you go to work at a bank, you're a Christian banker or you're a Christian Walmart worker. No, you are a manager at Walmart that's saved. And so that sets your principles, guidelines, and rules and code of conduct. And so God started calling me to, I started performing in clubs, I started doing this, doing that, and doing that. And, but the biggest help was one of my near and dear mentor and the person that linked both of us together was Apostle Angela Tebow, Pastor Angie,
yes.
right? She had to help me get out of my box.
Mm.
I had become conditioned and started to beat myself up, and I started to oppress myself, self-condemnation. And she's like, what are you doing? She's like, son, get out there and do what God told you to do. If you got to go rap in the club this Friday, just make sure you're at the church meeting on Saturday. This is my pastor telling me this. And I'm like, what?
Yes.
And you know what? I went and rapped in the club, and guess who was standing right there? Pastor Andy Tebow right there. Like, oh, boy, that's my son up there rapping. I'm like, oh, if you don't get out there with that cowl on. But, you know, she started to changed my tradition, changed the religion, changed the staunch traditionalism, especially within the context of church, and even more specifically the Black church. What does this look like? Because our purposes can be smothered in that,
mm-hmm.
right? We start getting
mm-hmm.
these mothers and fathers in the gospel, and our purpose automatically has to line up and look like what they did. And she's like, no, God created you for something, and you have to get out there and share. You need to write, you need to rap, you need to act, whatever it is on your heart to do, Ken, go do it. You know, but keep God first and make sure you are a light, you know. So over the years, that's what, and you better believe I got kickback because after that little liberation, I started looking different. I started feeling different. You know, I wasn't wearing a 2-3-piece suit to church no more. I come in here in my Tims and my jeans and I'm teaching my tail off. You know what I mean? But I'm like, I could not allow people to speak on who I was and what my purpose was because they didn't see what I saw through my telescope.
I like it. I can dig it. Yeah. And that's what people need to hear, you know, more stories like that. Not just, not just seeing the end result. And I think with you, what I'm most, I won't say most impressed by, but one of the things that I'm most impressed by is that you're very goal centered. You set the bar where you want to reach it, and you do it, and you do take the steps, and you do what you need to do until you get there. And that's a big part of we're talking about knowing your purpose, believe, pursue, and achieve. And that's you have to. You know, each person has to tap into that discipline. And it is about taking a risk. But you're taking a risk on yourself. And so often people are so conditioned to depend on the support and beliefs of other people around them. So if this person doesn't believe that I can do this, then I'm not going to do it. And I've shared...
Right.
You know, I shared one of the stories, and I was actually, this is during my first marriage. We were married about 10 years. So it was a pretty long marriage, and we were really deeply into the church. But when I started kind of going through this shift of, I just feel like there's more that I want to do. And I did a couple of church plays. And you know what I mean when I say church plays.
The Coonery Tyler Perry?
No. Miguel's never done Coonery.
Because I was about to hang up this phone.
Weren't because you know better than that. But they were just kind of geared towards, the churchy, traditional type of topics, not anything that really took, my creativity to that next level. It was easy for me to produce those type of plays, and people loved them. We did them in a few churches, and I was telling my husband at that time that, this is not, this doesn't really embody the message that I want. I never felt comfortable being preachy, even when I was preaching. You know, that was never my route because I had seen, you know, because of what I've gone through in my own past, I've just always had a problem with, you know, preachers preaching that condemnation. And we've all heard it, you know, over the pulpit. So I've always been against that. And I also, you know, I didn't want to chase people away. I didn't want to run them away. I wanted to give messages, but allow people to use their intellect and to allow God to deal with them wherever they were to bring them to those conclusions. And so I just got to that point. I said, you know what? I said, I am going to do this play. I'm going to write this script that I want to write, and it's not going to be churchy. It's not going to be what you know, anyone thinks is going to be. And I said, I'm going to, you know, going to go get this theater. And nobody knows me as a playwright. This was many, many years ago. And I said, I'm just going to do it. And I said, if it is successful, then, you know, I'm going, you know, I told God, I said, if you bless this and it's successful, I said, then I know that this is a part of my purpose. And so I wrote this script and I cast it. And I actually had people from the church that had came to audition that got the script and like, oh, I don't want to be a part of it. You know, got really like really holy on me. And I was like, that's okay. You know, I'm thinking you can't act anyway, you know.
So, you know, probably said that to their face.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have a problem with that. Come on.
You do not.
I really don't, and I never have. So so I did. I wrote this script, and it was Bad Seeds. That was my first professional script, and where people actually paid money to come and see it. And got this wonderful theater in Oceanside, California. And, you know, it sat about 400 plus people, I think about 500 people or so. And we just like put it out there. We were just, you know, didn't know what we were doing as far as, you know, promoting it. But I was just trusting God. I was like, you know what? You know, I'm going to do it. And God, we rented this space for the whole weekend. So we have multiple shows. And let me tell you, Kenneth, that every night of that show, it was packed out. It was sold out. And, I remember the opening night. I heard, you know, you hear all the chatter and the voices, and I opened up the curtain because I was like, I was freaked out. I felt like only 20 people were going to come. And so I opened up the curtain and I was like, oh my God. And people kept telling me, oh my God, it's packed and they're still coming in. There's a line. And I was so like, I had to take this moment. It was so surreal.
Yeah.
I had to take this step back, and God, like simultaneously as I opened and saw, and it was like a plethora of people. It was like Black, white, Mexican, everybody. And he said, remember, you said that if I bless this and made it successful, that you would realize that this is what you're supposed to do and you're not going to let it go. And so from that moment, for the whole weekend, we packed the house, and you know, I knew then that was a part of what I was supposed to do. And it was a big risk. It was a big risk financially. It was a big risk to put my name on something. Nobody knew me. And, you know, it could have went either way. You know, people could have been like, this is like straight up garbage. But, you know, so I tell people all the time, you have to take a risk, you know, for your life and for what you believe and what is in you, because everybody around you is not going to see it. Even the people that love you are not always going to see. Oh, did we go there? Go ahead and go on. Touch on that.
You know how many people. So I've never shaken that vision of going into politics, like being a congressman or a mayor. And a lot of people, even now, within the context of me being in the military, like I put in for it to be a naval officer. You know, I was prior enlisted, and I put in to be a naval officer, and people think it's for the money. Well, really, what they fail to realize is I'm setting up for my campaign later on. Like naval officers, like a lot of our presidents and congressmen and senators are prior naval officers. So what people fail to realize is this career move now is campaigning for later. And so a lot of the stuff that I do as far as social justice is concerned, activism, you know, in the education systems, finding, you know, looking for improvement, change of policy, fighting gentrification, whatever it may be, I'm getting used to this public servitude because I want to have a vast resume when it comes time to be able to speak to certain things because I see that down the line. And so a lot of when you have purpose and you have passion, it lines up and it acts. So you said something earlier about, well, just to touch on this thing before I kind of digress a little bit, family. I tell family, yeah, I want to be a congressman or mayor. And they look at me like I'm an idiot. Like, you know, I'm like, aren't you guys supposed to be kind of happy? Like, can a brother get a high five or something? Like, oh, man.
Right.
They were just like, oh, man, really? You're going to do that? I'm like, yeah, actually, okay, fine. Okay, you guys don't see it. I'll just invite you to the celebration dinner when it all happens. Like, that's
exactly.
Cool. I'm perfectly fine with that. But when you said something earlier about achieving goals and, you know, and how purpose lines up with all of that as well. Me having that feeling what my sense of purpose is, right, it sets the tone for your goals. It sets the tone for your ambition to reach these goals. I do a lot, as do you, and I firmly believe that I can literally do whatever. Like somebody told me that when I was a kid. Like, Ken, you can do what you want when you get older. You can do what you want now. And I was like, okay. Like, when I decided I wanted to be a writer, I was like, I am now a writer. And I started writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I taught myself how to play the drums at, like, 24, 25. And people hear me play the drums. They're like, man, you've been playing your whole life? Like, no. One day I sat down in front of the drums and was like, I want to play the drums. And I worked at it, and I became a drum player.
Yeah, exactly.
This lines up, and you know, the final point to this, and I really want to get out to listeners, is it lines up with, you know, as a man thinketh, so is he, right? So the capacity of the mind to transform a person to something is phenomenal. And the example I have for that is you can achieve something by brute force intelligence, right? Like, how can I explain this? Okay, so a doctor, what makes a doctor a doctor? What makes a lawyer a lawyer? They go somewhere and they read something so much, they become so absorbed in it that they begin to think from that seat or from that position. So I want to become a doctor. I'm going to read all this stuff on medicine and practicing medicine and being a doctor or, you know, a lawyer studying law, that I'm going to read it so much and become so absorbed with this because I'm passionate about it and this is my purpose, that I'm going to start thinking like a doctor or a lawyer. And then this institution is going to gauge how well I think like a doctor or a lawyer by testing me, right? And then they're going to go ahead and accredit me with this and say, this guy, he passed the bar, he is now a lawyer. Because they studied so much, they absorbed, they became a subject matter expert on certain things. When I started my record label and I had like, what, 8 artists and put out 6 albums and we're traveling with, I didn't have any knowledge of how to do that stuff before. I was like, I want to start my own record label. So I want to take a business management class. I want to learn accounting. I want to know how to keep my books properly. Before I even got to the artistry aspect of things, I want to know how a president of a company runs a company. I need to establish a board. I need to do this, that, boom.
Right,
now we're
right.
Running into the artistry. I don't have producers. I need to learn how to produce music. I start getting software, making my own beats, learning how to record, learning how to put everything together. Man, we got a show. I've never done a show. I started looking at concerts on YouTube and, oh, man, how does this artist do it? Well, I want to have that feel that a rock artist gives. I started watching Rolling Stones and AC/DC and Rage Against the Machine. And I'm looking and absorbing until we became that, until we're in a packed-out place of everybody coming to see Camp Liberation in a standard room only, and they're sold out all of our albums, all of our merch. They're rocking our T-shirts. They're saying our lyrics, and I'm jumping off the stage acting a fool. And we have accomplished this goal because in my mind I said this is what we're going to do, and we just did it. A lot of people have to have that mindset to say, I'm going to do this. I have a very good friend. Her name is Stephanie in Chicago. And for years, she has worked as a paralegal in a law firm, right? She's so motivated to me. Stephanie is late 30s. And she was actually my manager of Kent Liberation during that time while she was a paralegal. So I hired her on as a manager. She did all my bookings, you know, my travel, all that type of stuff. She used to get told by the lawyers all the time at her firm. I think she worked there for upwards of 7 to 8 years, you know, at this time, or almost close to 10 years. And they're like, Stephanie, you're good enough to be a lawyer. You're smart. You're intelligent. She was like, I'm just here as a paralegal. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. And one day she was like, you know what? You guys are right. Well, you know, this girl is done with law school. She's a lawyer now. Because
that's
she was
awesome.
Like,
yeah.
You're right. I'm going to become a lawyer. Enrolled in school, studied, established disciplines, and now she thinks as if she was. She saw herself as a lawyer.
It.
She put that brain, that energy, the mindset, established the disciplines and goals, got there, and now stepped into work. So this is where people need to get as far as purpose. Establishing
yes.
these goals, setting these disciplines, pushing them towards that mark. And actually, you can literally, listeners, you can be what you want to be. That is not like cliche. It sounds so cliche, but it is so much truth to that. It's not even funny.
I love it. And hold on. So I have a question. This is from Michelle. She said, Kenneth and Legale, you seem very confident and driven. Were there ever points in your life that you struggled to believe? I'm sorry. It's dark in here. I'm trying to read this. Were there ever points in your life where you struggled to believe in yourself, your purpose, or your dreams? That's a good question.
You want to start with that?
Yeah. I'll answer and I'll let you answer. Michelle, yes. Simply put, yes. There have been times. And I think that, you know, and I think I know Kenneth enough to be able to kind of make this assessment. I think that not only is it confidence that, you know, I think people pick up on, I think it's a deep faith as well, that people can kind of sense and may not know exactly what they're picking up on, but my faith in God is much greater than my confidence in myself, if that makes sense. So it's not so much that I always walk around with, oh, Legale can conquer anything. I would be lying to say that there weren't, you know, moments that, you know, I doubted myself. But just like Kenneth was saying, you know, it really is about putting your mind to it and just jumping in and doing it. And I've been doing that for like so long. You know, I was a teen mother. I got pregnant very young, and I was like, you know what? I can sing, I can write, I need to be in the music industry. And I literally just did it. I didn't know anybody, and I've shared this before, but I just got out there and made connections and, you know, really did some pretty big accomplishments while I was in the industry. So it's not always about, you know, feeling like you have to, you know, have all of the qualifications. A lot of times people kind of take themselves out of the equation because they feel like, oh, I'm not qualified enough to do that. But when it's something that is in you and you have that genius, you have that creativity, you have that authentic ability to do it, you just have to get out there and do it. And so to answer your question again, absolutely, I've had moments where I was like, what are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. But, you know, I also learned to be my own best cheerleader and champion. If I don't believe in Legale, it really doesn't matter what other people believe. I have to believe in myself. And I do. I believe in what I have inside of me. So, yeah. What about you, Kenneth?
Yes, most definitely. I think how we gauge success is a big thing as well. Like, to me,
yeah.
Complete a thing is success. And not really, it wasn't world. So if I complete an album, I completed, like, I did this. So therefore, I'm an artist because I completed an album. I'm going to try to get out to as many people as possible. But just because there's not worldwide dissemination doesn't mean I was a failure. I did that thing.
Say that again.
So much truth.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. You got to say, see that right there.
Where are these people coming from? There's so many people. Oh, my God.
I know they're jumping in from somewhere. They're listening. But you need to reiterate that again. Say that.
Okay.
Just say it again, because it needs to resonate with people that feel like success is denoted by monetary gain. So what you said was so profound. Just say it again.
Okay, so It all boils down to how you gauge. You need to view and measure success differently. So if I set out, if my goal is to write a book, I can't beat myself up because it's not on the New York Times bestseller list or we don't have worldwide dissemination. If I wrote the book and the book is published, I completed a thing. I am an author.
That's right.
Right? So
right.
you can push to get the worldwide dissemination, get as many people to read it as much as possible. That's awesome. But I don't consider myself a failure when I complete a thing because that is my thing to be completed. And that's, you know, yeah, that's what I said.
And that's... but that's awesome. That's it. You know, to complete it, to, you know, we allow what we see in media and what we see in movies and, you know, and all these things around us to kind of have us so geared towards money. And I've been in a place where I had it and I was around people that had it and they were miserable. And I thought that the more you got, you know, the better that things would be. And then I was, you know, suddenly around these multi-millionaires who were more miserable than I was and just,
yes,
you know, the little bit that I had. And so I learned very quickly that money does not mean success. And
No. Doing
what you know, it doesn't. And people so, you know, yeah, it's great to have it when you got to pay your bills and we need money to, you know, do those things. But it should not be your life's focus is, you know, getting more so I can get more stuff. And, you know, just that's, people just have no idea how miserable a lot of very, very wealthy people are because they lost themselves along the way. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that goes, one of the first things I say when we started the conversation was in identifying your purpose, you should find a purpose to serve and not a lifestyle to live. And that really changed it. So even me as an artist, as a music artist, I was less concerned with album sales and me selling and making all this money, and I was more impacted when people contacted me as an artist and wanted to discuss my lyrical content. They wanted to talk about what I was talking about and talk about how it impacted them. Or every morning I wake up and listen to the song that you made, and it inspires me to get up and start my day. How am I serving people? How am I impacting people? And that's why I got most of my fulfillment. You know, LaGale said something very important. She was like, just doing it. That's, talk about completing a thing. I recently started writing a book and wanted to write plays. And for all the listeners, I look up to LaGale in so many different ways, right? I've worked with her as far as theater is concerned. And I asked her, how did you do it? How did you? She was like, Ken, just do it. Just write. Start writing.
Yeah.
Stop talking about it. Just start writing. And I was like, okay. And as I started writing more and more, it started to flesh out more. And that writing became more and more of a discipline. And so things start to shape together. And so this is not something that we're just saying, she actually lives this stuff. And in a personal conversation between me and her and me wanting to achieve some of my goals, that's the same gouge that she gave me as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. And that is, it's so true because I think so often we complicate things and we make them, you know, when it's in you to do, we will keep ourselves in that stagnant place because we're so analytical and we're, you know, we want to make sure that we're, and you're like that, you're very, you know, you're a perfectionist and you're a genius as well, and that's a complex type of way to balance. You constantly have to find balance within because genius is that sort of liberated creativity that just kind of goes and flows how it wants. But then being a perfectionist is, in a sense, trying to contain that and trying to make it look a certain way when in actuality you just have to let it be and let it exist how it wants to exist. And
yes.
And that was so deep. That was some good stuff. So hopefully, you know, somebody should have.
I'll be knowing stuff sometimes.
We're like giving you guys like some good stuff, and they agree. So I'm glad you guys agree that it's some good stuff being given. But we do. We overcomplicate it, and sometimes you just have to like sit there and just do it, especially with writing. I know that in my early phases, I overcomplicated it. I wanted it to be perfect, and I was just doing the most, and I was losing the vision. And I just decided, you know what, just get the words out. Like, write it how you see it, put it down on paper. And when I did that, it was a beautiful thing. And I use that model with all of my shows. I just, you know, I get the vision out of my head, and instead of trying to recreate it while it's in there, just, you know, just get it out.
Yes.
So just like Nike says, just do it.
Just do it.
Just get it done. Get it done. Hold on. We got some more comments. Okay. Richard said, I'm sorry. And they know that, like, while I'm doing this show, I'm sitting here in the dark and I just have the big computer screen. He said, you guys are great. And yes, you are giving valuable information. I would like to ask Kenneth, I would like to ask Kenneth, what are your immediate goals? What is he trying? I don't know what this is for politics. I think he's asking, if you're still listening, Richard, can you, because I don't know if you're doing like a voice text, because it's just letters, and then I see politics. So I think he's asking about your, because you mentioned that you want to go into politics. So I think he's like asking, what are your next goals towards that? I'm thinking he's asking, Kenneth.
Oh, my next goals towards that.
Yes, that's
okay,
what it is.
Okay.
You know how they do the voice text and you get some of the words and then they're, yeah, so I see politics, because he said, what are your next goals? And then it's like some stuff, and then it's like for politics. So I'm believing that that's what he is. So yeah, so what are your next steps, or what else are you doing to get you towards that particular goal of getting involved in politics?
So another thing is, so my degree vein is education. The secondary degree is going to be political science. Working, I guess, within the particular field that I am now, as far as the Department of Defense is concerned, the military. But right now, it's really being involved in local government, city council level things, no matter where I'm at. So right now, like, I'm a resident of San Diego, but I've been working out of Seattle for the last year, and I got another couple years up here. So while I'm up here, I'm not going to be stagnant in that. I'm involved with community projects, more on the lines of social justice. So I'm about to get involved. Actually, I was part of I went to a panel yesterday in downtown Seattle discussing gentrification of the Central District of Seattle, and there was a documentary shot on it, and we're talking about policy that we're going to present to the mayor to kind of reverse that, because, you know, the black demographic is being displaced and yada, 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 and et cetera. And so it's really about capturing that as far as social justice is concerned and changing policy and how that affects a particular city. And so I can get a really good grasp and aspect on governing cities. So then I kind of take that at a greater level as far as state is concerned, if that's what's in the cards. So, you know, mayor and or congressman is, down the line, I still have about 10 more years to do in the military. And after I get out, I'm going to go into public service as well, as, you know, city council, et cetera. If I'm in a bigger city to have aldermen, I'll start there and then kind of work my way up. So this is, you know, going to be later on in life when I'm doing that, when I feel like I'm kind of seasoned, have a really good resume to be able to do it. But right now, as far as local government, that's kind of what I'm involved in, a lot of stuff as far as social injustice. So I'm about to link up with the United Hood Movement out here in Black Lives Matter Seattle.
Love it. That's awesome. And I can see you doing that. I have no problem seeing that as being a part of your life's path. Okay, so here is Marshawn. Hopefully I am saying the name correctly. She is asking us, Legale, I guess maybe my contacts. I don't know what the problem. Like, trying to refocus.
So, listen, in case y'all didn't know, Legale can't read good. So she was one of them children that you just don't call out on in class. She don't read good out loud.
lies. They know that's some lies. She's like. just going to lie on me like they like they. So she said, Lagel and Kenneth, you are both inspirational. Thank you for this topic. I am taking notes. What if you have tried to pursue your dreams and or purpose and failed? How do you continue on or pick yourself up?
You have to understand that failing is imminent.
Yes.
Failure is going, it's kind of like I teach a course on conflict management, and the reason why we call it conflict management is because wherever there are people, conflict will be there. So we don't erase conflict or completely eradicate it, but you have to manage it and manage it well. And so that's what I do with failure. Failure is imminent. It will happen. So you have to learn how to manage failure when it comes. This does not come. So there's another train of thought. Okay, so I was reading this book called called The Art of Long View. I forget the author. It's a very good book. The Art of the Long View talks about success and how to I kind of couple it with a train of thought that I always tell people that I mentor about parallel progression. So you have these different lines, and each line is a track of progression for something that you're going to complete. You can have multiple lines for one goal, multiple ways to attack something. So if one of the lines gets stopped short or one of the lines begins to get erased, the more lines you have, it increases your opportunity and chance to become successful. The Art of the Long View, what that discusses is working out almost every possible scenario in any given situation and being prepared for it. So if you're prepared to react a certain way, all right, so I have this goal in mind. Well, if I'm working these steps to get this goal and I only had one line going that way and that line gets stopped, that's where we feel ultimate failure. But if I have four lines going in the same direction, I've identified four ways to attack achieving this goal. If you stop two of those lines, I still have a 50% chance to still achieve my goal. I just have to go about it a different way. And so that's the Art of the Long View, is really about parallel progression and working out multiple scenarios to achieve the same goal. So you're prepared. One thing you're prepared for, you're preparing for imminent failure. Something's going to fail. If something's going to go wrong, it will go wrong, and I have to be ready for it. Okay, bam, that went wrong, and here is my contingency for that wrongness that just happened. And now I'm going to move forward. And knowing that failure is not a mark on character. It's, you know, when you're achieving goals, you're projecting action and energy to accomplish something. We take failure so personal. A lot of it times because we attach our passions and our personality with it. But we take it as a hit. Do you know how many contributing factors and variables go into accomplishing a task? And then we take the burden of the success of something and we put it all on our shoulders. So if something doesn't come to fruition, we suck. Oh, I suck. I fail. No. I'm just going to continue to push this agenda until it completes. But I have to understand, like a huge equation written on a board, there's so many variables, X's, Y's, Z's, numbers, letters, blah, 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 inside of parentheses and multiplication and division signs. And when something doesn't go right, I have to rework the problem to get my end on the other side of that equal sign. You just got to keep working it. So take the onus off of yourself. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. She is in all caps. She said, "Thank you, Kenneth. you got me on fire right now." So I guess
I can shut up. There we go.
No.
She just told me to shut up.
She did. I think she's loving what you're saying. I love how you said that. All of that, there's nothing to add to that. Just that's it. You know, it's going to happen. Failure will happen. And it's never really failure unless you allow it to stop you permanently. So,
stop you.
Yeah. So everything, and we're almost out of time, but everything is, you know, if you look at it the right way, you can gain wisdom and learn something from from everything that doesn't work out the way that you originally planned to. So, Marshawn, I'm glad you hyped. So I don't know what your I don't know what your dreams or whatever you let go of, but definitely take heed to what Kenneth has shared and get back up there. Get back up and keep working at it. So that's good stuff. we're going to have to do a part two of this or something, because I see a few more people have, I can't go into those questions. So I do see if you're inboxing now, I do see it, and I'll maybe I'll post some of your questions on our page and let Kenneth kind of answer for you guys there. But yeah, so give me any kind of closing, you know, give me a summary of all of this. Give me some kind of closing, your closing thoughts on what you would give to someone who maybe they know what their purpose is. Maybe they've reached to, you know, to try and have failed, but they want to get back up and start again. Encourage someone that may be in that place right now. What would you say to them?
Okay. My favorite person that needs encouragement. Okay, here it is. Here, I got something. Something just, yeah. I guess, erupted in my Shondo. Okay.
Okay.
When it comes to purpose, and we talked about purpose being aligned with servitude, right? You not picking up your dream, your passion, or your purpose and going on with it. There's somebody out there that needs you. There's somebody out there that is going to be greatly affected in a positive way. And so if you for a moment can get outside of yourself and say, I need to do this thing because it's going to touch someone, maybe a child, maybe a broken home, a single mom, a dad, or something. Purpose is closely related to servitude, right? And there are people out there that need something that you have, and everyone was created and designed to give something to someone else. And so if for no one else, think about that person out there that you can be impacting, and hopefully that's enough to get you up off your keister.
Get off your keister.
All right.
Yeah, that you. I was just all like almost teary-eyed until the keister. I'm kidding.
Yeah, come on. No, you didn't have to say that on the air for the people. The keister, you know, it's a beautiful blend of emotion and humor. You know, that's what I am.
Yes. Get off of your keister and get her done.
Get off that keister and get her done.
Get off that keister and get her done. Yes, we are a little nutty, but isn't that what every creative person is? I don't think I've ever met a true creative, is what I call us. I don't think I've ever met a true creative that wasn't slightly nutty.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, Legale, we've toned it down significantly for the case of the show, and people do not even realize that. You know it, too. I was well behaved. I'm proud of myself.
I want to tell you that you got through this hour just being like, I'm like, really, Mr. Stoic? And just, I'm like.
Told you. That's because that one time you tried to play me, like I can't be no serious actor. Hello?